Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy wherever they get their podcasts.
Delivering all the news, the informed views, and just telling great motorsport stories since 2003. Powered by theracetalk.com. This is On The Grid.
G'day everyone and welcome to another episode of On The Grid here on mypodcasthouse.com or on the Radio Show Limited's RS1. Thank you so much for joining us. Big show coming your way very shortly. Tom Archuleta, the Dorrit guy, is going to catch up with Hunter McIlroy. What an amazing few weeks it's been for Hunter over in the States. We'll have a chat to him about that and much more and what might be coming up in the future. Richard Crowell and Mark Walker to join me to talk about everything that's been happening in the week of motorsport, and we'll also give our hots and nots for this week. All that to come right here on The Grid.
You're listening to the latest from around the motorsport world. On The Grid.
Nine of the Indy Lights season heads to Iowa Speedway, and joining me is the previous race winner, Dorrit ambassador Hunter McIlroy. Good morning, my friend.
Yeah, good afternoon here from Indy. I think it's morning for you, afternoon for me. So whatever, that's, I don't know what you say there, good afternoon / morning. But obviously last round was mega. You know, finally got that elusive win off my shoulders. So feeling good this weekend. Obviously, Iowa round 9 of the championship coming up. First oval of the year. We had a really strong test there about 3 weeks ago. So yeah, really looking forward to it and looking forward to going fast.
So Mid-Ohio, pretty much the perfect weekend. First in every session. Describe the feeling, describe the weekend.
Yeah, it was just kind of all year was leading up to it. You know, obviously, you know, I just talked in the last video we did about being a little frustrated with, you know, I've had great results this year. Lots of podiums, lots of poles. And obviously just getting the win. So lots of really good results. But until I kind of got that win, it was really frustrating because I'd been in position a lot to do that. And it just necessarily didn't kind of click, or for whatever reason, you know, maybe a little bit of luck didn't go my way, or, you know, I made mistakes when I had wins in the bag or whatever. It just kept escaping me. So to get that win, it was kind of a huge relief. And it's kind of funny, you know, when you sometimes when you force something, it kind of works against you, you know, like I kind of talked about in the previous episode we did. So, did exactly what I said I was going to do in terms of just having fun. And it's pretty amazing what happens when you know, when you feel confident in the car and you're having fun. You know, as an athlete, being in the zone, I guess it's one of the best feelings ever. So, yeah, P1 in every practice, P1 in qualifying, led every lap. Fastest lap by half a second. Doesn't get much better than that.
So tell me about, like, you smash a weekend like that and you're a young guy and you're living your dreams, right? Having a crack. Tell me how many text messages you get, like how many Instagram followers you get. Like, tell me like how it feels, like what happens after a race for someone like yourself? Like, how long are you spending replying to people, for example?
It was funny actually you say that, because obviously Indy Lights is quite a high category. Obviously, the highest junior category in North America, you know, America's version of F2, if you will, and IndyCar taking ownership of the series really has kind of boosted it up a bit. You know, they do a lot of kind of posts about it on the IndyCar social media and things like that. So naturally, you know, the IndyCar fans are paying more attention, and the IndyCar teams obviously are following really close too. So I think after the race, I had about 50 text messages in total, and it was cool just to see the amount of people that are, you know, not necessarily just the people I know, but just all these people that are messaging me, you know, good job, like race fans that I've never met. And it just kind of shows that how many people are watching, you know. So all my family and friends reached out to me, and it was a good feeling. You know, everyone knows how much it means to me and my family, and it was a good, really good moment. You know, to have my dad there was really cool. Obviously, he's been with me through the ups and downs, and just felt like a really good feeling. You know, and I guess all the other stuff, like the followers and all that, you know, it's all byproducts of success, and obviously not why I do it. a racer. I love racing, but it's cool. You know, I think I got about 500 new followers in a day or something. So it's all kind of just nonsense, but at the same time, it's great. You know, obviously I have great supporters like you guys, and I want to represent them to as many people as I can. So it helps, right?
Yeah, sure does. All right, let's talk about Iowa this weekend. 7/8 of a mile or 1.4 kilometers in our language. Tell us what it's going to be like in the Indy Lights cars.
Yeah, it's really, for me, it's probably the favorite oval I've been on. I don't know if that's just because it's in the Indy Lights car going way faster than I ever have in any other car, but it's really cool, man. Like, you're flat and qualifying trim, so low fuel and new tires. It's really good. It's really cool because it's not easy flat. You know, you really have to be confident and trust everything. But it's a really you know, it has a lot of little characteristics that are unique. Like, it's quite bumpy, honestly, for an oval. There's little bumps in places which can unsettle the car sometimes. So you have to be really on top of your game with your car placement and things like that. But I think Deg is going to play into part a little bit. You know, I think our race is 75 laps long. So honestly, around an oval, it's going to be our shortest race. So it's actually not going to be that long, even though it's 75 laps. Obviously, with the oval lap being so small, but I think degradation is definitely going to come into it. So being in dirty air, which we call, you know, following other cars, being a 20-second lap, even if you qualify on pole, you're going to be catching lap traffic in 10 or 20 laps. So you're going to always, no matter where you are, you're going to have to deal with some lap traffic or some cars in front of you giving you some dirty air. So you've got to be really smart where you place your car and kind of how you adjust your tools in your car to stay on top of that the most. So it's going to be a really interesting race. You know, it's even, I think, as much as it is a track position race, you know, starting on pole is going to be a huge advantage. It's really going to be, you know, not over till it's over with the lap traffic and the tire deg and things like that. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be, I think, for me, another really good weekend. We were, like I said, really strong on the test there. I feel very, very confident in my one lap speed going off the test. It's going to be a little bit hotter, but we'll see. You know, I feel confident and I'm as ready as I can be, and I'm ready to have some fun.
Yeah, great. Okay, fourth in points, six races to go, about 100 points off the lead, 50 for a win. Where are you going for this title?
Always. You know, obviously I didn't make it easy on myself the first couple races, but, you know, obviously the last, I think the last three or four races I've scored the most points out of anyone, which is good. You know, obviously doesn't mean anything, those stats, but it's nice and shows the performance that I've been really putting in recently. And three straight podiums, it's what, you know, where you need to be is on the podium always to win championships. And Linus has done a really good job being consistent. I think the worst he's finished is fifth, but he hasn't really had a bad round yet, you know, or any bad luck. So you never wish that on anyone. I want to race him clean and hard the whole year and have no luck or anything come into it. But, you know, it just happens. Everyone has that one round where something maybe doesn't go to plan. So you can't really race time thinking about that. So I think if I finish, if it finishes how it did at the last race, every single race, I'll be the champion. So I'll just try to do that every time. And it's obviously a bit of a gap. I'm super close to P2 in the points, which is good. But obviously, you know, if there's a chance, I'm going to be pushing for it. So the pressure's kind of off. Like I said, as much as I want to win, it doesn't really help trying to add anything or add any pressure to try and do that. So obviously, I'm always pushing for the championship, and to the last lap in the last race of the year, I'll be pushing for it. And if I can do it, amazing. You know, and if we get fall short, I know I've given everything I've had.
All right, let's go. Enjoy the high speed oval, and don't get too dizzy, mate.
Thanks, mate.
There's more great motorsport stories coming next on The Grid.
All right, joining us for our final chat, the trio tonight, not the quad, but the trio of Richard Crowell. Crowsey, hello.
It's a good, I suppose it's like a trifecta. It depends what your payout is, though, whether you feel like you're getting value over the quad that we had last week. But hello, Tony. Nice to be with you once again.
Sometimes trifectas pay more than quads.
Mm.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Shake your head, Mark Walker, because I don't know what the hell I'm talking about either. How are you, buddy?
Yeah, sorry. Mathematics, not my strong suit, or quality or quantities. Yeah, I got no idea. So hopefully it goes well.
How was the weekend for everyone, non-motor racing wise?
Yeah, it was a bit quiet, wasn't it? No Formula One race. It was good if you were nocturnal, so Mark was probably satisfied. But it was, not a massive amount on, but some good storylines rumbling around our sport, and probably leads us into talking about IndyCar racing, because there's quite a bit going on in that side of the world at the moment. And they were in Toronto for the Honda Indy, which is cool, and first time back there since the pandemic, and was greeted with a really good crowd. Really entertaining motor race, as they have been all year in IndyCar racing, and a pretty amazing result, Chebec's in the end, for one of our favourites and one of the greats of the sport in Scott Dixon.
Yeah, the Brisbane-born Kiwi. That's because he won, we call him that. Yes, good win for him. Shocker for Will Power, though. In regards to a man who was really trying to accumulate some more points to stay in touch with the championship, has that just left him?
Yeah, it hasn't. It hasn't helped his cause, has it? So he's still second in points coming out of Toronto, but gave up ground to Marcus Ericsson, who really solid top five, actually extended his championship lead. But the story was Scott Dixon and. Chebec, if New Zealand don't name at least some of the North Island after this guy, there's something wrong, because he has to be one of New Zealand's greatest sportsman. Exports.
Yeah.
So he equaled Mario Andretti for second on the all-time winners list in IndyCar racing. The only driver with more wins is AJ Foyt. But there's an argument to be had that and it's impossible to compare eras, but what Scott Dixon has done is done it a lot of his winning in the most competitive era of IndyCar racing possibly ever, when everyone's in the same gear, you know, races are decided by hundredths of a second rather than laps like they were in the 60s and 70s. So nothing against AJ Foyt. He's still obviously one of the greatest of all time. So he's equaled that. But the stats are amazing. So he made his IndyCar debut in 2001 for PacWest in what was CART, the end of the CART.
Yep.
World Series. He won that year. He didn't win a race in 2002 when he switched from kart to IRL. He didn't win in 2004 with Ganassi, because Ganassi were in uncompetitive cars. But he won in 2003, and he has not gone winless in an IndyCar season since 2005. It is utterly bonkers that he has won at least one race every year since then. It is an amazing track record. Phenomenal. Yeah.
Certainly is. Mark Walker, you would have to be equally as impressed as Richard about Scotty Dixon.
He was always a bit special, wasn't he? Like when he was racing in Formula Holden in Australia, it was like, wow, okay, he's pretty good. He's going all the way. He's going to do some big things. And even then, like in his rookie IndyCar days, yeah, he had that bit about him that, wow, he's pretty good. And it's incredible, isn't it? He just keeps on pumping out the results. Another big one there in the weekend. But for mine, the big one in IndyCar circles this week, Alex Palou. What a situation. What's your read on that, Rich?
Well, I'm going to save my take on it to the power rankings at the end, because it's going to be either hot or not for me, and I'll tell you what it is later. But it's a really interesting circumstance, and yeah, that's clearly the lawyers are the only people who are going to win out of this. So clearly Ganassi think they've got him. Palou thinks he's going to McLaren. McLaren think they've got him. There's no way I can see Palou, having been through this, driving for Chip Ganassi next year, though. Because why would, like, you're better off taking a year off rather than driving for a team you don't want to be at. We've seen this before so many times in the sport. It's the Shane Van Gisbergen thing here, isn't it?
Yeah, the amazing thing for me, Richard, is that both sides of the stories seem both so far away from each other that it's near impossible to actually try and tell what has happened.
Yeah,
there doesn't seem to be any middle ground between both stories.
No, it doesn't. And Ganassi are adamant that they've got a contract out, but it's got all the hallmarks of everything being real last minute rushed. And Ganassi put out a statement saying that we've elected to extend Palou's deal, take the option up on his contract. And why wouldn't you? Because he's going freakishly well, won the championship last year, hasn't won a race this year, but he's been second three times. He's been on the podium another time.
Yeah.
And he's third in the championship, less than 40 points out of the championship lead. So he's going brilliantly. So, of course, you'd want to keep him, but Pillow clearly feels like he can get a better deal somewhere else. The word from the States is that the deal he did with Ganassi was pretty cheap because he came from Dale Coyne. He wasn't a name driver. He didn't bring championship success with him. It's not like they were a team signing a Joseph Newgarden or a Scott Dixon. So it was a pretty cheap deal. Went and won the championship. All of a sudden turns out he's pretty genius at this IndyCar business and has been offered, you'd imagine, very, very good money from McLaren to go and join that team, who are spending up big to go to three cars, and they've signed Alex Rossi and they've got Pato O'Ward, and now they think they've got Alex Palou, which would make them arguably the strongest three-car driver lineup outside of Penske. And but Ganassi feels otherwise. So there's something in there that will click with the lawyers when they take this to court, because that's what's going to happen. But it's bloody interesting.
Is the carrot of Daniel Ricciardo's seat dangling somewhere in that mix?
It must have been. And other reports I've read were that the out clause for Pillow was that if an F1 opportunity was offered, he could get leave Ganassi. Yeah. So that could be my only thing, is that Zach Brown's gone, okay, we'll make you a test driver or something like that. But there's no way they put Pillow in Ricciardo's seat, because that's got Colton Herta written all over it.
Yeah.
Tested the car, tested for McLaren, their last year's car at Portimao for 2 days, young, fast American, for a team led by an American who's a commercial genius at selling to the American market. Like, just McLaren, like, it's match made in heaven for them. And Colton Herta has been pretty clear about wanting to go to Formula One. So,
but the problem is all these guys are in that pool of that they can draw on. They can just battle it out between themselves. Like, McLaren doesn't really care. No matter what, they're going to have good IndyCar drivers
and everywhere.
They can pick the best of the bunch to take that second F1 seat.
Mm.
Yeah, I haven't seen the race in Toronto yet. You mentioned Colton Herta. There was a bit of talk that our own Scotty McLaughlin might have hampered his efforts to win that race in Toronto. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, look, it just pit lane there is really difficult, and things just didn't work out, did they? But there's nothing malicious in it, I don't think.
No, for sure.
And ultimately, Scotty, he got mugged on the last restart and dropped from the top six to ninth, so he didn't have a great day, solid top 10 and still seventh in the championship. But Andretti Autosport have got bigger things to worry about than Colton Herta finishing second when he was leading. But like, Dixon was never going to be beaten in that race anyway. Dixon passed him, I think, before lap 20 and was driving away. And like he does all the time, was inventing fuel when unexisted with the fuel economy that he so magically does. And he was just superb. So I don't think Herta was going to win that race regardless of what happened in the lane.
Will Power, we spoke about him just at the start of the conversation. What went wrong? How did it go so bad?
Didn't qualify well, did he?
Mm.
Tough if you qualify down the back, especially at that place, and then didn't get the rub of the green with the yellows.
Yeah.
So, but he's still second in the championship, Chebec, so not out of it. Penske car's always good at Iowa, double header. Two races, things can swing pretty quickly. If Ericsson has one bad race there, the game changes, and Will Power has a really solid weekend. He'll be good. They tested their before the last race, half the IndyCar field, and McLaughlin was fastest. So you'd expect them to be very, very competitive there. So, but everyone has these up and down races. Like, you look at the top three in the championship. In fact, almost every driver in the top 10, I'm just re-rising this as I look down. Every driver in the top 10 of the IndyCar Championship has had a finish worse than 15th at least once this season.
Mm.
So that's just it's so up and down and unpredictable. So, you're going to have a bad race every now and then, even if you end up being champion at the end.
Well, while there still seems to be some competition in the IndyCar Drivers' Championship, it would seem that the other two championships that we follow closely, supercars and Formula One, drivers there seem to be fairly cruisy in their pursuit of championship. And I speak, of course, of Max Verstappen in F1 and Shane Van Gisbergen here in Australia in supercar. So for me, that means there's only one thing to do. And if we're going to have a championship to follow, we're going to have to follow the team's championship, because in both those categories, the closeness in points is absolutely quite amazing.
Yes, I think you're riding off Formula One a bit soon, though, Schmex.
You reckon? You don't think?
Well, don't think like Max,
Charles, as good as your last race, aren't you?
Leclerc beat him outright last time, passed him three times to win the Austrian Grand Prix. Ferrari on a bit of a roll. They've had a blip on the radar, but they've won the last two races. So, yeah, it's 38 points now, but 25 for a win. So he's only really a race and a half outside the lead of catching Verstappen. So
So let's pretend that Max Verstappen is like way ahead.
Well, why don't we just use the supercars one, where there is no chance that anyone beats Shane van Gisbergen this year?
You're right, and there's only 10 points in the team's championship between Red Bull and Shell V-Power Racing.
The question is, does anyone outside of Shell V-Power Racing or the Red Bull Ampol Racing team give a damn about the supercars team's championship?
No.
Right, good chat. So. No, thanks for listening to On The Grid this week.
But it's just... when you're in the circus, I mean, you're the top two teams, or any team in supercars, it matters a lot, because it just reminds you of how good or bad you were the whole next year when you're parked. You know, I had it described to me as the stupid end of the pit lane once, and you feel it, because sometimes with supercars, it's good to be the very first pit in, but typically you want to be where Red Bull and the Shell V-Power guys are, down the other smart end of the pit lane, and they have a much clearer run out sort of thing. So for them, it's important. I don't know. We haven't been brought up on it, have we?
No.
It hasn't been a part of really the psyche of what we're trying to achieve or what we really talk about,
It's not sold either, is it? Like, we don't get a team's championship graphic when they show the driver's championship points like you do in Formula One. And I think there's so much more on the line in F1 with the constructors that it's literally millions and millions of dollars.
Is that because there's a bit of inequity, I suppose, in the fact that we have single car teams? So it's not a proper teams championship?
No, but it is.
It's constructors over in Formula One. It's literally, it's Ferrari versus Mercedes. Like, they are constructors. Here it's just different teams sort of thing. And it is a bit mix and match. You know, you have Tickford 1 and Tickford 2 and Brad Jones 1 and Brad Jones 2. It's a bit of a weird little situation that we've got going on there. So, it probably would have been more of a better thing back in the day when everyone had a two-car team. But now you've got two and three and four-car teams. It's a bit sort of all over the shop, isn't it?
Yeah, we should clarify that, though. When you say it's constructors, it actually, by constructors, they mean the people who build the car, not necessarily the engines. So not all the Mercedes engines band together and get points, just in case people were listening and weren't aware of that.
Yes. No, 100%.
Yeah. So who wins the supercars championship this far out, can we say?
Drivers.
No, team's championship. I don't care about the driver's championship anymore.
We've already awarded it.
SVG won it. Oh,
wow. He gets beaten, there's something seriously wrong with the world.
Doesn't it? In all honesty, it has to be. It is his to lose.
Yeah, it is. The team's championship all depends on Brock Feeney, in my opinion. So,
absolutely spot on.
He's the only of the top three, only driver within 888 or DJR that haven't won a race yet. So if Feeney finds some form and wins races in the second half of the year and Shane continues to do what Shane's doing, then T8 win it, clearly. But if Feeney continues just to this rookie year that he's having, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, back in the top 10, and DJR continue to be quite impressive like they have been for the last two or three rounds, Darwin especially, and Townsville, they were quite good with some more podiums.
Pretty much everywhere bar Winton, really.
They're very strong with two cars. So they are a strong two-car team. Then, absolutely, I would put advantage to the Ford Mustangs in that equation, for sure. The other interesting one for mine is that I think there's some bragging rights between Grove Racing and Walkinshaw, fourth and fifth, and right now they're split by 4 points. And just this yo-yo form of both teams this year, it could come down to who finishes higher at Bathurst at a double points, well, it's essentially a double points round, 300 points for a win, that it could come down to a Bathurst result dictating which one of those two teams finishes higher in the team's championship. And, you know, you finish fourth or fifth, who cares? But between the two of them, it's a bit of a bragging rights thing, especially given Grovey's is Walkinshaw Engines now, and Walkinshaw switching to the same brand as car as Groves next year. So it's just an interesting little subplot there, with Tickford in the middle of them all in no man's land in third place, just being reasonably consistent now. So, yeah, it's an interesting little fight, but there's just not much impotence put on it.
I think the other thing that's interesting too is the fact that Triple Eight have blocked Shane from driving the Trans Am car, as well as a couple of other things. So they really, it would seem now, want Shane to focus wholly and solely on the job at hand in supercars. Would that be right?
What was the reasoning behind that? Because is he still running all his rally stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he's off to do rally New Zealand, so.
Surely the rally stuff has a lot more degree of danger about it than banging around in a TO2 car.
Well, I realised the round he wanted to do was QR, but you're not going to end up parked in a tree there like you might halfway down the rally New Zealand stages.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think there's politics involved there beyond Triple Eight team level, I think. I think it's pretty clear supercars don't want him in a Trans Am car. For what reason, I don't know, and they may be okay with it, but that's the hot chat in the paddock. I find it disappointing. I was looking forward to seeing Shane in those cars at QR in a couple of weeks at the Speed Series round. I thought it'd be a really good show. Interesting to see where the young blokes like Nathan Hearn line up against him in that series, and that's a really good benchmark for those kids. It's the best driver in the country at the moment. So it's a bit frustrating that he doesn't get to have a go. I'm sure Shane doesn't care one way or another, but he's always been pretty open about the fact that he wants to be that guy that's in a car every weekend.
Yeah.
He's very old school in that respect. So, yeah, it's a bit disappointing, to be honest. But anyway, that's the way it goes. He'll be in a rally car and loving life over in New Zealand in the World Rally Championship in not too far away a time.
Hey, speaking of categories, saw an email, I think, come out from you this week in regards to the Bathurst 6 Hour for next year and the putting out feelers for who would like to be involved. What happened to the categories that were involved this year?
Well, it's a year-by-year relationship, Chevex. Okay. So,
got to treat them mean to keep them keen, Chevex.
Well, okay. It's a demand.
So they don't have first?
Well, I don't know the contractual status of support categories at the Bathurst 6 Hour, Chevex. I don't know how that works. Maybe they do.
Yeah, obviously, but neither do I.
There's very little opportunity to race at Mount Panorama, so demand is always higher than supply. So it makes sense for the promoter to put a call out to categories that may not be on the radar.
Yeah.
There could be a 60-car field of, I don't know, Mark Sports cars or Group N cars from Perth. I don't know. I honestly don't know. But the whole idea of that was to put the feelers out and see what's out there. We know what's been at the 6 Hour in the past. It works. It's a good program. But we don't even know what of the Speed Series category is going to be there next year. Will it be a round of TCR? Will Trans Am be there? There's a finite number of rounds they can go to as well for their calendar. So I think it's just good business to
find out put who feelers
out, and see who's out there.
You know, the thing is that Bathurst, it's a very expensive place to put on a race meeting. So if you can get these support categories in and make them financially viable to run them sort of thing, that can half back the whole race meeting, which is what they need.
Yeah. Hey, the last couple of years with COVID, one of the things that really took our imagination and just ran with it was, of course, the E-Series. I think everyone got behind it. Have we missed it this year?
It's no, because back. It hasn't been run yet.
It is coming back in the next few weeks.
Yeah, but it doesn't have the same appeal gravitas for me. The 2020 thing was lightning in a bottle. It was special because we had nothing else.
Yeah, correct.
And
that first night, like, that brought joy to my life.
Yes.
I don't know about anybody else.
Likewise. But
it was Neil Crompton on television calling fake car racing, which was just sensational.
Was it fake?
Well, it was pretty awful.
It was sort of the WWE.
The shunt at Monza is all time.
Yeah. It's still car racing, just done virtually.
The helicopter shunt. Was that the helicopter shunt?
Yeah. But it was a thing. It was lightning in a bottle for a world that needed it at the time. And the first version was sensational. But so much of that was about the pro drivers, the real drivers being there, quote unquote. Yeah. That's a terrible term to use because the virtual drivers are still real drivers. But and then, you know, it came back last year and there were some supercar drivers and pro-am and rah-rah, but it just didn't have the same vibe. But there wasn't so much of a need for it last year because we had more racing in the first half of the year. So, yeah, the 2020 thing was remarkable. It's one of the great moments in Australian motorsport. I genuinely believe that because... Yeah. Like Mark said, it just brought joy to people's life and gave us something for 10 weeks that we didn't think we were going to have. I've never drunk more on a Wednesday night in my life than exactly. That little period.
The breweries are gone. Literally, the local brewery in Brisbane has closed now, as of now. Because
of E-Series.
Because of E-Series. Yeah. Wednesday night drinking.
Yeah, but it was fantastic. And in a really dark period for those of us that work in the sport, and everybody else, for that matter, it was needed. But now
to get guests like Max Verstappen and Lando Norris and that sort of stuff, that was just great.
But now it goes back to being a virtual motor racing competition, and there's a market for it. And supercars have clearly done a very good job commercializing it.
Yeah,
and that's great, fantastic. It's a valuable part of their business, and absolutely keep it every year. But it
is predominantly gamers, isn't it?
It's all gamers. But it doesn't become, it's not part of the psyche of a motor racing season like it was in 2020. That it was lightning in a bottle. And even if we, for whatever reason, went through that again, I don't think you'd recapture that magic.
Mm.
Honestly, I don't think it would be the same. So not that we're going to go through that again. Touch wood.
You obviously don't live in Victoria.
Yeah, no, I don't. Scares me though. Lightning in a bottle, remarkable thing. And I have nothing against people that enjoy the virtual E-Series as it is right now.
Yeah.
But I probably won't watch it, to be brutally honest. It's just not my thing.
Not the same. Mark, you would have watched your little fill of NASCAR this weekend or this morning?
They got the race in after a bit of a rain delay. Christopher Bell with the win, 14th different winner for the season. And basically the deal with NASCAR, the playoffs, how it works is that if you win, you get in. Except the problem is they got 14 winners and they got 16 spots and they still got six races left and there's a heap of wild cards still to come. There's a couple of road courses and the decider is at Daytona. So, and that is an absolute wild card that anyone can win. So there's a very real chance that somebody's who has won this year won't be going to the playoffs. And you're going to have really good guys like at the moment, you know, Kevin Harvick and Ryan Blaney. Martin Truex is on the cusp of not making it, even though they're having ripper seasons. They just haven't collected that win, which is all important.
Mm.
Christopher Bell sort of been on the outside a bit looking in, and he's come through and scooped the pool on a day where the Titans ran really well. You know, Martin Truex Jr. looked like he was going to win the race, but they buggered up the tyre strategy towards the end. Bubba Wallace had probably the best day of his career to finish third. And frankly, it was for nothing. Like, it doesn't matter. He needs a win right now to see himself into the postseason. The really big one, it actually stole all the thunder. Alex Palou stole all the thunder from NASCAR earlier last week when Denny Hamlin was having a 23-11 just mid-season update, and at the end of it, oh, by the way, who's it? It's Tyler Reddick.
Mm.
Guess what? He's driving for us in 2024. So he's a lame duck.
Conference.
He's a lame duck for 18 months at Richard Childress Racing.
Yeah.
And Richard Childress Racing's response was, this could not have come at a worse time, end quote.
Yeah.
It's very inconvenient to us. So it's very interesting to see how the mechanisms of that work out. You know, he's finally broke through for a win at Road America the other week, which was probably a little bit, you know, surprising because he's been so good on some of the ovals, especially stuff where you're up riding the wall sort of thing. Tyler Reddick's very good at that. And he's tabbed as one of the hot shoes in the sport. And began 23-11, whether they go to three cars, whether Kurt Busch is done, whether Bubba Wallace is on notice. It's going to be interesting to see how all that plays out.
And what can you tell us about Bobby East, who was fatally stabbed at a service station?
I know. That's wild. I don't know. Honestly, don't know. I just read that before came online here. That's insane. Not good.
No, and to be honest with you, the only time I've ever actually been scared in America, and I've been there now seven times, is when I was at a service station.
Mm.
There's vagrants who hang around there, and they're just, they come up to you while you're filling up your car, asking for money and all this sort of stuff, and it actually is a scary experience.
The only time I've ever felt unsure of myself my whole life traveling around the world was in Oakland on a Tuesday morning, like in the middle of the day. It was just, it was terrifying. Like, it's hard to describe what was going on, but yeah.
Shebex, was that petrol station the one out near in East Indiana, Indianapolis?
No, this was in Utah.
Yeah.
Okay, Salt Lake City.
Pretty sketchy where we were staying there. That
There's no doubt about it. And what Matt Nolte and I did by walking up to the McDonald's window at the drive-thru
you almost and got asking yourself for hamburgers, mate. Yeah, that was...
Could have been the end of us right there.
Yeah, I'm frankly amazed you came back from that. Hashtag indie stories. We could go from that. Should we move on to the Doric Power Rankings?
Let's do that.
Right. I'll start some
Please
hot.
Please do.
I'm going to start with hot. And my hot is the IndyCar contract dispute. I think it's great. I love it. I love a bit of contract Barney because it means the sport is serious and there's serious cash involved. And for too long, IndyCar has been on the fringes of something like this. But it's all been a bit polite and a bit friendly, and it hasn't had that box office big sport feel because there hasn't been any contract dramas like this for such a long time. So I think it's great. Remember when Shane Van Gisbergen had the dramas with the whole Erebus situation, buying out Stone Brothers? That was great. It was all anyone talked about. It was so serious, like one of the stars of the sport leaving a team and retiring and coming back and the money involved. Fantastic. It's good for business. It dominated the news headlines going into the Toronto race, which was good because outside of that, the storylines are more typical motorsport. But this was brilliant. So I'm a big fan of it. I think it's great. Hopefully we don't lose Alex Palou to IndyCar racing because of it, at least for a season, because he's a very, very good driver. But that makes my hot. It's big ticket motor racing, and it gives IndyCar a big ticket motor racing feel, and I think it's actually really good for the support, for the sport even.
Yep. My hot is Daniel Ricciardo coming out in the last few days saying that he's definitely going to honour his contract at McLaren in Formula One, which is fantastic because I don't think there's ever been any doubt about Daniel honouring his contract. I think it might be the other way around. So, but good to see that Daniel has stepped out and said, I'm here, I'm staying, I'm not going anywhere, and you've got me for another year. So for me, that is a hot thing.
Well, guys, you're probably going to see a little bit less of me. I've made a life decision and I'm going racing. I'm going doing motorsport.
This is hot.
This is hot.
Could be not.
No, it's hot. It's so hot. The Pakenham Auto Club, they had a Carna Cross and a paddock over the back fence from my house. And I went down there yesterday to have a gander. And my goodness, that looks like all the fun in the world. And the entry fee is $40. And you just go out there and you bang around your road car around a little grass racetrack. And you know what, Shebex? You can share your car.
No.
So, like, I'm going to have my thing. It's going to be prepped. We're going to be ready to go. We're going racing over in the back paddock in the Carna Cross. And you can double enter in it.
I'll give you $500 towards it.
No. It's $40, mate.
I mean towards the car.
What are you doing to it? You're just going to drive. You don't crash it. There's not much to hit out there, I don't think.
Are you going to use the Focus or the?
Oh hell yeah, I'm using the Focus.
I think you should run the Mitsubishi with a kid seat in the back.
Well, we could run the Triton.
But
said that, I did get bogged at the MCG last weekend, so that was
true. Out the centre wicket. Mm. But it was such a cool thing. So you got adults there, they can do that. But if kids as young as 12, the entry fee was $20 a pop, and they could hire one of the cars from the club for $10.
No. What sort of car?
Oh, whatever it is, Hyundai XL, it doesn't matter.
Fantastic.
I thought that was just the absolute duck's guts. So that's going to be
one of the best hidden secrets in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's been hiding in absolute plain sight. It was the site where they had those plans for the Sandown replacement, I guess. But from what I can gather, the Pakenham Club have got a long-term lease there for what they do with their Carna crosses and motor Carnas and whatnot. So, yeah, that's where my weekends are going to be spent from now on.
Oh, please give us some dates.
Yep.
No, you can read more about that on the racetalk.com.
Richard, you can come over too. There's, like I said, you know, four drivers to a car.
Drive your Focus too hard, mate. I feel I would break it.
Can't break a Ford, mate.
You can.
Well, you better have it in front of me then, Richard, because it might be
shotgun. Right, knots. My knot's pretty straightforward. It's the Wakefield Park situation. Really messy. We'll go into it in depth later on when we can get some people that actually know what they're talking about. But it's a terrible situation. But the bigger ramifications are that if it all turns to poo and Wakefield disappears, New South Wales is in a really bad place for motorsport.
Yeah.
And
the ADRC would disagree with you.
100% they would. And that could be part of the problem, Shebex. I'll hasten to add that before the haters jump in and say, oh, yeah, but they're spending all the money on street races. Well, street races are still very important. And if there wasn't the Newcastle 500, there wouldn't be a race there at all. But their racetrack situation is now perilous. And the list of states with two racetracks, at least, is now every state in Australia, basically, except Darwin, has two racetracks. And the only one that wouldn't would be New South Wales, which has the largest population and one of the largest domestic motorsport scenes in Australia. So it's a really poor situation. Obviously, the ideal outcome is that Wakefield Park gets some form of compromise made where they can operate to a level that they're viable so they can continue to have national level motor racing. But if Wakefield Park goes away, New South Wales is in strife. And we can only hope that the New South Wales government, which has shown a willingness to invest in motorsport with both the street races, the Bathurst circuit, well, the Bathurst events, I suppose, where they continue to be a major sponsor, and the new speedway, which they paid for and built, although they've made that themselves by shutting the other one, you could only hope that there's potential for a permanent circuit to be built somewhere else, because that state surviving on one permanent circuit, that is Sydney Motorsport Park, it'll make things really challenging there, and it'll send some extracurricular races to Queensland or Victoria, because it'll be tough to complete a 6-round state championship at Eastern Creek, given how busy that joint is.
Does it bring forward the plans of building a permanent circuit at Bathurst?
Well, what it might do, Shebex, is put that back on the table, because that's gone very quiet for a while.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, you know, it's a similar drive to Goulburn to Bathurst, really.
Correct.
All of a sudden, it might make some sense if Wakefield Park doesn't exist. So I think the Bathurst City Council will be watching that very closely.
You know, at Wakefield Park, that place pumps $17 million a year annually into Goulburn. That's a huge wedge for a smallish town. You know, if you sell that to Bathurst, that you're going to have $17 million extra in accommodation and hospitality.
On top of what they already get from the five 100%. Events on Mount Panorama, yeah.
And Wakefield Park, it does, you know, it is focused on that sort of next rung down. It's not those five Bathurst events. It's that all that extra stuff. It was running 280 days a year for a regional track.
And that's probably the key, boys, to the Bathurst thing is, and this is coming to a story near you on the Race Talk, that I think that the Bathurst proposal, which was always to build a track that could host MotoGP or that, which was a pipe dream, because MotoGP is never going to leave Phillip Island. No, and correct. If World Superbikes leaves Phillip Island, it's coming to the bend. It's not going anywhere else. So maybe this makes the Bathurst track easier to get off the ground, because they could retool their proposal to bring it down to a level where it doesn't cost them $80 million to build. Maybe you go, oh, we're going to spend 20, and you build a really nice circuit. Forget
about
hosting.
We're going to get a whole lot of state racing every weekend.
Exactly. You'll rent it for 280 days a year, like Wakefield Park. So maybe that will see a retooling of events there. But we need to go through the process with what's going on at Wakefield first, of course. And the ideal scenario is that place continues on, because it's a genuinely good little place to go car racing. But she's in a pretty tough spot at the moment.
Yeah, it's just a shame. Because, and I mean, it's a cautionary tale to racetracks everywhere. It's dot your I's and cross your T's, because you go, the root cause of all this goes back to 1993, when the original development application for the place stipulated that they were going to use it for 48 days a year.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's now running 280 days a year, you know, a court looks at that and goes, you're not allowed to do that. You know, if you got a block of land, you can't just do what you want on it. I can't just set up a oil mine here on my house. Like, you, there's rules and regulations in place. And yeah, it's just unfortunate that it's all evolved this way, that they're sort of a victim of their own success at the end of the day.
Why not, if I may? And I'm going to stick with Formula One. Is Oscar Piastri and his situation at the moment. I had a really strong understanding from a couple of voices in the know that Latifi was finished at Williams after Silverstone, and Piastri was basically replacing him for the remainder of the year. And that hasn't seemed to happen. So I don't know what's really fallen apart there. And then I read a conversation with Oscar's mum over the last few days, and she says the family has been put on hold a couple of times in regards to starts, and then being told a couple of days beforehand, don't bother, it's not going to happen. So really messing around with this kid at the moment. I mean, I understand that he's fully compliant with the fact that he's not going to race in 2022. Hopefully that he can, but I think, you know, he understands that that may not happen. But to have start, stop, yeah, you will, no, you won't, maybe you will with them, no, it's not going to happen. If that's actually happening, then that's really playing around with this kid's head. And
I think he'll be all right, mate.
Oh, I'm sure.
And
he will
be. The bottom line is, if Alpine don't give him a drive somewhere, he can leave. Is my understanding of his deal there?
Yeah.
So it's incumbent on them to put him in a car now, whether it's one of theirs or to go, okay, yes, you can go and drive for someone else. Then really the boot's on their foot, but it's up to Fernando Alonso whether he continues on or not. Ooh. I'd get rid of Ocon. Well, that's Alonso's been going better than him.
And I think Alpine have said that decision will be made during the summer break.
Yeah, so there's two races left in the next two weeks, and then they make that decision. So, yeah, look, he's got some really smart people on his side. Mark Webber leading those negotiations. He's pretty canny with all that stuff. Yeah, he'll be fine. I get what you're saying, though.
Roger.
So am I not, and I mean, I'd like to have a standing knot from last week being James Golding's haircut, but we haven't seen it this week. It might have improved. I don't know. I can't literally knot that, because he might have fixed it. He might have listened to the podcast last week and gone sorted out. So we'll keep it a similar.
James, if you're listening to the podcast, could you please hit our socials with a selfie? We'd just like to see what's happened there.
Thank you. So in a similar vein, I'm going to keep it on haircuts. Colton Herta had a balaclava disaster, a failure. And all his luscious locks fell in front of his face and he couldn't see where he was going.
Wow-wee.
No joke. Huge.
So that's a hairy situation.
Two haircut failures in 2 weeks for the Doric power ranking knots for me, I'm afraid. I couldn't imagine. No, I mean, I literally couldn't imagine.
You couldn't imagine that, no.
I couldn't imagine that at all.
No, you couldn't.
No. Yeah, no, get a haircut, champ.
Yeah. That's it. Great work. Right. Another good week, boys. Thank you.
Like it. Supercars back next week. Formula One back next week.
What's going to happen at the Bend?
The Bend Motorsport Park. It's going to be an interesting round. Very interesting round. And we will preview that for you next week.
Look forward to it. Catch you then, boys. Catch you then right here on the grid.